This is the No Dogma podcast. I'm Brian Hogan, and today I'm joined by Lars Klint, a technical instructor for Azure and a Microsoft MVP for Azure. Thank you very much for taking time out of your day, Lars.
No worries. I'm happy to be here. Thanks, Brian.
To start off, can you tell us a little bit about yourself, please?
Sure. So I'm that guy. I'm the immigrant here. I live in Australia, but I'm Danish by birth. And there's a lot of immigrants in Australia, so I feel still at home. I've been here a long time, but my background is I'm a software developer. I've been developing for 20 odd years, a bit more maybe, on everything, big corporate projects, products, services, whatever you can imagine, almost I've done. I had an affinity for for Windows Phone for a long time. I was that guy that bought all the Windows phones. That's how my MVP came about. My Microsoft MVP award came about as a Windows Phone MVP. And I still have, 18, 20 Windows phones or something in the cupboard, the cupboard of shame and lost memory and lost hope. but it's been a long journey. And so now I'm ended up in Azure, which is obviously Microsoft's cloud offering. And I work for a company called A-Cloud Guru, which is based in Melbourne, which is close to where I am. And I do Azure courses. I do a weekly news segment on what's new in Azure called Azure This Week. I try and inject my quirky humor and terrible attempts at jokes at times. And I'm actually having quite a lot of fun doing what I'm doing. So that's me, I think, mainly. I like cars.
How'd you end up in Australia?
That's a really long story, but the short version is my girlfriend at the time had dual citizenship, Danish and Australian, and I moved with her to Australia to study, and I got my degree here, and I kind of got stuck, got offered a job and another job and so on. So I'm not going back now, though.
I imagine the weather is pretty nice.
Yes, except for today where it's bucketing down, but no, it's pretty good normally. I don't live in the tropics. I live down in the temperate climate, but it's still very pleasant.
Tonight's my time tonight, middle of the afternoon, your time. We're going to mainly talk about cloud first and whether companies or individuals should go that way with their work. But before we get on to that, let's talk a tiny bit about what is the cloud and what are the ways you can get into the cloud.
Yeah, sure. It's one of those questions that as you and I work with it all the time and we kind of live in the cloud almost, we forget that it's not always as obvious what it is. Essentially, the cloud is someone else's computer. There's no actual cloud. It's a server that lives somewhere in a data center. The difference between having your own server in a data center and using the cloud is that the cloud is often backed by a massive company such as Microsoft, Amazon, Google, IBM, Oracle, one of those. And they spend an enormous amount of money pouring knowledge and effort and research into these data centers, which is the cloud. So it's using the cloud means you're using someone else's computer to perform a service. And the really great thing about using the cloud is that you abstract away from all the boring stuff. So if you are a technical company and you have or just any company and you have to, create a product, instead of having to first what we sometimes refer to as shave the yak, meaning we have to do all the things we don't really want to do the things we want to do, we can just skip all the hardware and the setup and the infrastructure details that we would otherwise have to do. And that is where cloud is sort of you just skip all that. You just jump straight into clicking a button going, yep, I'm on this server now and I can use the cloud. That's a very brief description of what the cloud is, but it's someone else's computer.
You'll hear the terms IaaS, PaaS, SaaS. Can you go through those ones for me?
Yeah. So IaaS or IaaS, PaaS and SaaS, the AaaS is as a service. So there are many jokes made on what could be as a service. But IaaS, which is with an I, is infrastructure. So those are your computers, your network, anything you could sort of relate to as hardware almost. Infrastructure as a service means that you use someone else's computer or network or storage in the cloud, usually. So this could be a virtual machine. So that's another computer that is Hosted by someone else. It's virtual, but it gives you, for all intents and purposes, it gives you a full machine that you can do whatever you want with. And the same goes with networking. You get virtual networks, which means you don't actually have the networks. You use the networks, which are then virtualized. I mean, you can be sharing a computer with 100 other people and you wouldn't know. For everything that you see, it is your own computer, your own network, your own storage. But you don't have to manage any of the hardware. So it's infrastructure or hardware as a service. And then the P is platform as a service. And that means that you abstract away everything I just mentioned, all the hardware. You don't even worry about any virtual machines, usually not worry about networking or storage either. So this could be something like, for example, an application on Azure, something like Application Insights, which gives you a bunch of tools on the platform that you can then use without having to worry about infrastructure. You don't have to set up any virtual machines. You don't have to set up any storage. You just use this platform to perform whatever it is you need on this particular product, whatever you're doing. Another good example is Azure SQL. So that gives you a whole database on Azure, but you don't have to worry about any of the database, actual machine, any of the hardware, any of the virtual machines, any of that stuff. So that's the platform. And then you can go one step further and do SaaS, which is software as a service. And the best example usually is Gmail. You use Gmail, it's software as a service. You don't have to install anything. It's often hosted all through a browser. So the software as a service comes through a browser. As such as Gmail, it could be your accounting software. It could be any of the Google services pretty much are SaaS services. Any of the Microsoft Office 365 is a SaaS service. So any of that. And those are the sort of three main abstractions on cloud that determines how much effort you have to put into managing all the infrastructure as a consumer. Obviously, with a SaaS, someone else is always managing the hardware and the infrastructure. So it's from a consumer point of view, how much do you have to do? And how much do you want to do? Because believe me, you don't want to manage the maintenance cycle on a virtual machine if you don't have to. So those are sort of the three main areas. That make sense?
Yep, thank you. Then tonight we're going to, as I said, primarily talk about the idea of cloud first. So this is something that a lot of companies here in the US are talking about. What does it mean?
Cloud first. It's a little bit one of those things that marketing likes to use, right? So it's, yes, we are cloud first. And I work for a company, ACG, or a cloud guru, and we're cloud first. We're also cloud only, which we'll get to, I believe, a little bit later. But cloud first, that means that you, for anything new that you want to produce or research or create, well, you start with, can I do this in the cloud? Like you're taking a cloud-first approach, just like if you're taking a mobile-first approach, which means that my primary focus on developing this product will be on a mobile device. It's where people are going to consume it. So cloud-first is how do I get onto the cloud before I even consider setting up any infrastructure or creating any sort of overhead in terms of buying hardware or anything like that. Can I go to the cloud and be cloud-first? Everything goes on the cloud-first.
But there is still a possibility that it may not go to the cloud if, let's say, some business reason or technical reason won't let you get there. Is that fair?
Oh, yeah, definitely. There's sort of two ways I look at this. There's the, let's call them the old companies. I'm doing inverted commas here. That sort of go, well, we don't like the cloud because we can't control it. So, and cloud is evil and we don't know where the data is. And there's some truth to it in terms of that's what people's perception is, but there's very little reality to it. With any of the cloud services, you can always get your data out. You can always determine where in the world they're going to live. And then the other side of it is, which is very prevalent with government adoption of cloud services, is this idea of governance and data sovereignty. If I put my data on someone else's server, where does the data live? And how can I ensure that it's, you know, the sovereignty of the data is within, say, a country's borders. So that's also a big concern sometimes. And that's one of the reasons that the main cloud providers have created their government-specific cloud regions. especially in the US.
Yeah, I know Microsoft have had issues with subpoenas in the US for data that happened to be in data centers in Dublin, and there was legal shenanigans.
It's a big problem because you are bound by law. There is no as such international cloud law. You are bound by the law of the country where you're operating in. So yeah, it does become a very big deal, and you have to be able to prove where your data is in a lot of circumstances.
You mentioned the term cloud only. What's the difference between that and cloud first?
So cloud first is a mindset of, if we can, we're going to use the cloud. So that could be that we're creating a SaaS service, we're creating a software as a service, we're creating a platform where people can go and use this service. But it could be that there is a process somewhere down the pipeline of where the data ends up that is not in the cloud. So some data gets transferred onto your, it could be your on-premises location at your office, it could be another, private data center. And then it's not in the cloud anymore. You're still cloud first because the majority of your products and your thinking is about using the cloud. When you go to a cloud only, it means you're only using the cloud. And this is exactly what we're doing at A Cloud Guru. Everything we have is in the cloud. And our founder, Sam Kronenberg, which I like to call Sam Serverless Kronenberg, is very proud of the fact that we don't have any VMs. We don't use VMs anywhere. We are what's called a serverless company. And it's – let's explain what serverless is. Serverless is kind of like PaaS on steroids. So platform as a service taking a bit further. So serverless is this idea of you never ever worry about any servers, which is what PaaS is. But it's also that you do one thing at a time. You do very simple things. So it's almost becomes, in our case, we use Lambda functions on AWS a lot. So Lambda functions are what is called Azure functions on Microsoft's platform. And it's this idea of doing one thing with a service. So you do one unit of compute. So think of it as when someone, say, uploads a photo to your Llama sharing photo service, you take this photo and then you have a function or a serverless process that does something to this photo. This could be that it manipulates it to, compress it. It could be, making it in different formats. It could be turning it over to an AI process to figure out what kind of Llama it is, whatever it might be, but it does one thing. And serverless is this idea of having many, many, many of those things so that you don't have this big behemoth of some sort of process that has to do all this, but you do it in many different stages. And the benefit of doing a serverless approach is that we've grown to about 1 million students on our platform with very little extra technical resource. So we were able to scale up this entire approach to serving about 1 million students. And that means that we don't have any servers anywhere. Whenever there is a new forum question posted, that's done via a serverless process. If we need to deliver a video to a student that they're watching in a certain resolution, that's done via a serverless process or many serverless processes. When you log in to your account, we've done all through Auth0, which is basically a software as a service for authentication. So all of this is all done without having any reliance on IaaS at all. And that's what's called a serverless approach. And we're quite proud of that as a company, that it works. We're one of those sort of, unicorn stories of, serverless does actually make a lot of sense if you have the right scenario. So that's what cloud only is. I guess that was the long answer for that.
When you're using serverless, so like in your case, the Azure functions or the Lambdas in AWS, there are kind of, my understanding is there are some downsides, like say maybe the spin up time. So you're taking code that isn't running, so it has to, I don't know if it has to be compiled, but it certainly needs to start running and then start responding. Is there a lag with these things?
There can be. So obviously, as we said before, the cloud is just using someone else's computer. And serverless doesn't mean that you don't have, there's no servers running anything. It just means that you're not managing any servers. So when you use, say, a Lambda function or an Azure function, there's a virtual machine behind it that runs the code that is meant to do the thing you want to do. And if that hasn't run for a long time, or a certain amount of time, whether that might be an hour, might be a day, then it needs to spin up again. This virtual machine needs to be created, you know, run up, so that it can process the data that you want it to process. And that can be, that's what's called a cold start. And that can be a problem, which is why there's now, at least on Azure, I'm not sure about AWS and Google, but on Azure, there's a hot tier for your Azure functions. And it sounds kind of, you know, oh, it's always hot, it's always running. It means there's always one more server running than what you need. So at any given time, when you scale up, you always scale up plus one. So your amount of servers running is n plus one, essentially. And that means that you can get around this, what you were saying, this lag when something needs to be processed. Obviously, you pay extra for that. But if that's an important concern, well, it might be worth paying for that. So there are ways around it. But again, serverless doesn't mean there are no servers. It just means that you don't manage any of them. So it's always, you know, we don't have any perfect technology yet that I know of. But this is kind of close.
I made a podcast some time back with a gentleman named Michael Dowden on serverless computing, in particular with Firebase. And it seemed like Google Firebase has a whole suite of serverless features. In the Azure and Amazon worlds, do they have comparable things to Firebase?
For Azure, Firebase probably the closest would be something like Cosmos DB. Cosmos DB is this idea of a globally scaled millisecond, latency kind of offering. It's not quite the same as Firebase. It's probably a bit more ambitious, if anything. But there are, if anyone remember the old Azure table storage, which I was a big fan of, that's basically been rolled into Cosmos DB. So all the the NoSQL kind of approach of not having a schema-less compute for your database, that is where Cosmos DB is sort of taking up that space. And it is, for all intents and purposes, it is serverless as an offering.
Let's go back a little bit to what we touched on earlier. The cloud-first approach obviously applies to companies like yours, but does it apply to most companies, some companies, not to old companies? Where do you think it falls?
If I'm honest, I think it applies to all companies. Where it falls down is the mindset of the people that needs to make the decisions. So yes, there is definitely hurdles in moving, say, a big pharmaceutical company that's global onto a cloud-first approach. But you would never do that in one go. It's always about, like, how do you eat an elephant one bite at a time? So it's a matter of finding, first of all, the low-hanging fruit. Where can I get the most value by moving stuff to the cloud? And for large global companies or just large organizations that have some established infrastructure, it is very often to do with how many virtual machines can I get rid of? Because virtual machines, they cost money to run. They have hardware that you need to maintain. They take an enormous amount of people to maintain these, both the VMs and the hardware. There's maintenance cycles, there's updates, there's all sorts. The more you can move away from any of the IaaS stuff, the more money you can often save, because it just means you need less people and there's less things that can go wrong. But it probably isn't for everybody, but I think that's mainly to do with people's attitude or the where they think the company needs to be internally. Often there's maybe there's an overhead cost initially in moving to the cloud, but over sort of 5 years ish, it almost always pays off. Just because you're removing all this hardware and all this unnecessary infrastructure that you're most likely your business is not about. It's not your core business.
If you were asked to help a company make a choice between, let's say, a cloud deployment for an application or an on-prem, what are the things you would look at?
definitely, as we talked about before, there will be something around sovereignty. Where does your data need to live? It's becoming less and less of an issue because the major cloud providers just have regions everywhere. Azure just opened another region in Switzerland, another one in Germany, or there's one in South Africa as now. So they have all these sort of peculiar places. They even have one in China, which is very different. It's still called Azure, but I would sort of almost say that it's not Azure. But you can have a Chinese offering with Microsoft. So it's becoming less and less of a problem finding the governance part of it an issue. So I would look at how much infrastructure do you have? How much of it are you relying on for your core business? So if you are a telecommunication business, it's probably likely that you have a lot of infrastructure that you need to manage the hardware that is part of your core business. But if you are say the new Gmail, it's probably unlikely that you will need to manage any hardware. So there's sort of a balance there of finding how much can you cut away, because it's also people, immediately get scared that they're going to lose out. It's just a natural thing that if someone comes and says, "Oh, I can remove your job and move all this to the cloud," they're going to get defensive. So it becomes a political conversation often as well, which is interesting, to be honest.
I suppose you would look at things like needs of scaling, data recovery. How important would you say those are for on-prem versus cloud?
Yes, definitely the scaling is a big part of it, high scalability. So there's three traits or properties of cloud computing that are often talked about. One is high availability. One is scalability. Can you actually have more resources very fast? And just the global reach. And those three, definitely, if you have a need for backup, which you can argue most companies would have, but if you're processing petabytes of data and you need to back all this data up, it might be useful to have that in the cloud. It can get very, very cheap to have large amounts of data in the cloud. But again, if it's something that you need access to and have it on site, well, maybe that's an option as well. It's rare that you need to have backups on site, but it does happen. And to be honest, Azure has this whole import-export feature as well, where you can get physical disks of about 100 terabyte that get sent to your office, and you put your data on it, it gets sent back, and it gets uploaded to Azure. So you can even do it that way, and that makes a lot of sense too. So there are always ways that you can use the cloud. It's more about a mindset of, do you really need to? The scalability, I think, is always an interesting one. Most companies that have their own hardware will not use anywhere near all of it in terms of resources. So it makes a lot of sense to use the cloud and not rely on your own hardware. And then when there are peak seasons, you pretty much just move a slider on a website and you get more resources. So it becomes that easy to a certain extent.
Speaking of the need to move masses of data from your on-prem to the cloud, have you come across a thing called the Amazon Snowmobile?
I've heard of the snowmobile. It's like an extension of the snowball, isn't it, from what I hear?
I haven't heard of the snowball, but the snowmobile is, let's say, an 18-wheel truck with a container on the back, and you put all your data into that container, which is filled with hard drives and other equipment, and it drives up to your premises. It parks there for however long, and then off it goes.
Yeah, I have heard of that, and I don't know if it's a bit of a gimmick. I'm wondering if it actually has been used. I hope it has, because it's pretty cool. Because that was a few years ago, wasn't it? I'm just reading here. 100 petabyte. That's one or two cat photos. That's a lot of data.
Yeah, no idea if it's been used.
No, but it's kind of cool. Microsoft has this. I don't know if they actually made it. I think they made it into production, but they were submerging data centers. So their idea was to get within, some little number of milliseconds, maybe 10 milliseconds traffic. So that's very close in terms of geographic distance from 98% of the world's population or something like that. And they were going to do that by submerging data centers on the coast next to where people live.
I think there was also an element of cheaper cooling as well when I read about that one.
Oh, of course, yeah, and that's one of the benefits as well. But I'm sure that wouldn't be the only reason they do it.
If you've made a decision that you are moving to the cloud, how do you choose which cloud to move to?
Yeah, that's a good question. It depends a little bit on the type of company and the type of products that you have. AWS or Amazon Web Services have been around the longest. They also have the biggest market share, and they definitely have a fully mature offering. They even have to the point now where there's they have a satellite. Oh, what's it called? They have a service for managing your satellites around Earth, like to that kind of extent, which is kind of cool. And it's just showing, you know, the whole Elon Musk conversation about sending stuff into space. But Amazon has pretty much a good offering for most things. I'm not a super expert on Amazon. Azure is very close behind. Those two seem to sort of go tit for tat what new features are and what the best features are. And I've always been in the Microsoft space, so it became natural for me to go into the Azure part of it. But as far as I'm aware, there's not a huge difference. Azure seems to be better at government things. They're compliant with a lot more regulations and standards and all that stuff. And then Google has a very, very small market share. But as we know, if Google put their mind to something, they usually get pretty good at it. And they're very good around the machine learning space, which is Microsoft is to a certain extent as well, as far as I'm aware. And then you got the outliers. You got IBM, which actually has a reasonable market share of about 4 or 5%, and they have a focus on like huge enterprise. And I did a bunch of research on quantum computing, and IBM seems to be up there as well with that kind of offering. So, yeah, it depends. Is that a good answer?
It's fine. On the note of quantum, I've had the same gentleman from IBM's quantum computing projects on twice on the podcast.
Cool.
Yeah, so they, from the time he was on first to the time he was on second, they'd expanded a lot, and it is available over the internet. You can send your job to a real quantum computer where it executes and returns you the results. But they are expanding and they are growing it. I know that. Should you be multi-cloud? You know, if take a company that's doing whatever they are doing, is it reasonable for them to be in both Azure and Amazon? What are the advantages and disadvantages of doing something like that?
You hear a lot about multi-cloud. It's a really tricky question. From a skills perspective, it doesn't make a lot of sense because you need people that are skilled in all the ones that you choose. I think it makes the most sense if you have products that are completely disparate, that are completely separate, and you can develop one without the other. There's not really a compelling reason right now to, say, have your data processing in Azure and your data storage and your serverless in Amazon. I think it becomes harder than it has to be. Multi-cloud could work. Having said that, actually, there's this idea of security monitoring across clouds, which is now becoming prevalent. So in Azure, there's the security portal or the security center actually lets you import AWS data. And the cost center lets you import AWS data so that you can monitor it all in Azure. And that's probably more than anything, it's probably Microsoft trying to sort of go, oh, well, we can still work with AWS. So even though you've got AWS, we still, well, you know, our products work too, and eventually maybe move more of it to Azure. But it's, yeah, in my world, there's not a hugely compelling reason for going multi-cloud. Have you come across any good examples of companies that do it successfully?
No. The discussions I have read were, if you're going to do it, and let's say you're going to deploy the same application to both or whatever, all three clouds, you're then going to have to find some common denominator of, well, they offer this service, each of them, and I can take advantage of, you know, the unique thing that Azure offers or the unique thing that AWS offers, because now I have to go down to that base layer to the all offer. So it didn't, nothing was particularly compelling about it. And as you say, the skill sets are different and the approaches are different.
Yeah, I don't think there's any, especially if you talk about the same application on all the different clouds that you choose, I don't think that makes much sense.
I hear people talking about it occasionally.
Yeah, and I've seen demos of it, you know, conference talks where they go, oh, look, you can, and I did it, and here's how you did it, and it all, you know, works through, you know, continuous integration or whatever it might be. And yeah, that's fun, but I don't think anyone would actually do it for production reasons. And it's the examples I've seen have been out of necessity. So they've like, well, we just bought this company that done everything on Google, but we actually an Amazon shop. So we're just going to make both work kind of thing. I haven't seen any good examples of a conscious decision from the start to go, well, we're going to use all three of the major ones, or we also need Oracle because of this or whatever it might be. I haven't seen any of that. But I could be wrong.
The only thing I could possibly imagine as a valid reason would be that you have some incredibly critical application that cannot tolerate a massive multi-region outage in any of the clouds. So, you know, we have had times when a few regions have gone down in Azure or gone down in AWS. And if you had something that could not be down for even a second, that might be a case. But, you know, that's not trivial. And then you've got all sorts of other things that have to handle that too. Like, what if your DNS goes down, as we saw with, was it DIN DNS or DNY or whatever it was some years ago?
Uh-huh.
So, yeah, that would be the only thing.
It's not a straightforward choice.
No. All right, let's say a person has decided that they're going to go to a cloud with an application. How do you start?
How do you start? Well, you go to a cloud guru and you I have to say that. That's what we do. First of all, you know, how do you start? You need to have an idea of a product. I always like to start with the product and then find out which of the cloud services that you need to learn about. So if you're a developer, let's say you're an engineer, you're a software developer, and you want to start, it's probably either go to a provider like a cloud guru or whichever training provider you like, or sign up for a free account. All of the big cloud platforms have free accounts and click all the buttons. Probably the best way that I can is just try and just figure out what things do. Don't be afraid to ask questions. There are lots of people that have very little knowledge of cloud, and a lot of them are scared because they go, oh, well, everybody else knows about it. No, they don't. Just ask questions. And then try and build a little thing that works in the cloud. Try and set up your you know, might be if you're into artificial intelligence, it might be that you can. I just saw a really good example of someone that did with 8 lines of code that was identifying whether it was a bird or not in the picture. Little things like that, fun examples of something the cloud can do that you could never do on your own computer. You know, machine learning, massive amounts of data to figure out if there's a bird in your picture. So little things like that. Try and get a sense for sort of the powerful applications that the cloud can provide. And if you are old school, like you and me, and you've been around where before there was the cloud, try and get your mindset out of, well, I can do this on my machine much easier because. Try and get away from that and genuinely explore what the cloud can do. But ask people. Ask lots of people. That's the best way I find.
But if you were, let's say, a company, I've seen companies take something like this approach. Let's say they have an existing application. I don't want to use the word legacy. Let's say a perfectly valid application written in .NET 2.1.
Yep. Cow application.
Excuse me?
Cash cow application.
Sure. Perfect. The one that's bringing in all the juice.
Yeah.
And what I've seen some of them do is they'll slice off a part of it. And they'll say, okay, now that feature is going to go up to Azure or Amazon, and we'll see how it goes. And when that's worked and you've learned your lessons from it, you then take another piece of that application and you cut that feature off and you put it up. and then you move little pieces at a time, and you learn as you go. Have you seen any approaches like that?
I have, and that works for some companies. There are definitely also companies where you can't just pick and choose bits of it. I used to work for a classified company in Australia called carsales.com, and we moved all of the image processing, because you sell cars, there's a lot of images. All the image processing was moved to, I can't believe it was Azure or AWS, and that was some years ago. And that was just the only thing that was in the cloud, at a commercial cloud vendor. The rest was all on our own data centers. So you can absolutely do that. And now, as far as I'm aware, they do a ton of stuff with, especially AWS. So yeah, you can absolutely do that approach as well. But just be mindful of not trying to force it. Sometimes we get so hung up on, oh, we have to use cloud, or we have to use this new shiny thing, that we forget that the aim of it is to improve our business. So just make sure we don't do it just for the sake of doing it.
Lars, any final notes before we wrap up for the day?
If you're in the space of IT and you'd like to have a job in the next, for the, say, at least 10 years, I would go into cloud. I don't think it's not something that's going to go away. It's going to be a part of your skill set. It might not be your entire skill set, but it's definitely going to be something that you need to learn about and need to have some understanding and be able to use.
If people want to find you, what's the best way?
Twitter, probably, like any other nerd. I'm on Twitter a lot, at Lars Klint. That's probably the easiest way to find me, join me on LinkedIn. I talk to lots of people on LinkedIn, which seems to be a reasonably good business platform now. There's less cat pictures and more conversations around, in my case, training of cloud services. But that's probably the best ways.
And are you presenting any conferences in the next few months?
I'm glad you asked. I'm actually going in a month, just under a month, off time of recording anyway. I'm going to be at Microsoft Ignite in Orlando. I'm not sure when this episode launches, but the Ignite 2019, first week of November, I think it is. I'm hosting a panel with two other Microsoft employees, which is Sonia Koff, another fellow Aussie, and Michael Crump, who's a former Windows Phone glory. I'm very excited about that. Two other speakers, which is Jessica Engstrom and Marcel de Vries, a Dutch guy. And we're going to talk about how do you get the most out of your developer career, which I'm pretty passionate about. I've done a lot of mentoring and getting people sort of forward in their career in software development. And then I'm going to give a brief lunchtime talk on how to create more inclusive community events. So no cloud content whatsoever, which is interesting, but other topics that I'm very passionate about. So I'm really looking forward to that.
Sounds good. Well, Lars Klint, thank you very much for your time today.
No worries. Thanks, Brian.
If you like this episode, you might also like episode 121 with Mark Eisenberg on microservices in the enterprise, or episode 111 with Michael Dowden on serverless computing and getting started with Firebase. Thank you. The opening music was Return by Nisi 23 from the album 11 and 12, and the closing music was Cloud Chamber by Pictures of the Floating World.